This episode of the Out of Bounds podcast is brought to you by Fisher Skis. All right. Hello. This is episode number 76. No, 77. 77 with Mike Polito from RMU Skis. I had a great time doing this episode. We actually did it on the patio out back in their like beer garden behind RMU in Breckenridge. And it was really cool. I really enjoyed doing it. And yeah, it was a long week. This whole like doing the trip things, like doing trips out to these areas to do podcasts is one of my favorite parts about this job. This job, right? Because I think it's a job. If I don't look at it like a job, then I feel like I won't, I don't know. I was going to say I feel like I won't take it seriously enough, but that's not true either. Like I totally would take it seriously enough still. Where was I going with this? Yeah, so my favorite part of this whole job thing, doing this podcast and building content, quote unquote, is the travel part. Like, I really love it. I'm super fortunate to get to meet new people and get to go to these areas. And like, I was thinking about it a while ago, and it's like, if you told 10-year-old me that I'd get to talk to some of the people that I get to talk to and have these conversations with them and like really get an insight. Like, I thought I knew stuff before I started this, you know, just from the industry side. And like, I will say, like, you do know quite a bit. And I think that's why this is really fun for me, is because like, I had a good base of knowledge going into this. I think if you just started cold turkey, it'd be really hard to do it this way. But I've learned so much more and got to talk to so many people from this whole podcast thing. And I'm super grateful for everyone that listens and the show in general. And I want to keep doing it. So that being said, where was I going with this? I don't even know where I like. Sometimes, do you ever start a sentence and you're like, you're just like thinking it's going to go somewhere, and then you split off on a couple separate ideas, and then all of a sudden you're like, you're in the middle of the woods, hypothetically, and you don't really know where things are going? Because that's where I'm at right now. Anyway, I'm super grateful to be doing this. I can't thank you guys enough for listening. The show's grown every month since we started, pretty much, with the exception of 1 month. I think we were down in maybe like June or something of this year. And it wasn't even down. It was just like flat. But we've grown every month. I'm super thankful for everybody that listens to it. And I can't encourage you enough. If you enjoy it, tell your friends about it. Share it on the internet. Share it on Instagram. Obviously follow us on social media. You know, YouTube is the one that we're kind of trying to push now, and just kind of grow that platform. But I'd also like, this is a good time for anybody that has thoughts on what we should be doing better, what I can do better, how we can up your or our perceived production value of this show and of this, like, of this out of bounds, out of media thing that we're doing here. If you have ideas or thoughts, shoot me an email. It's just adam@outofpodcast.com. And I'd be happy to hear from you. I do my best to respond to everybody. The contact us part on the website actually goes to a different inbox. So if you hit that, I will get it. I just will get it slower than I will get it if you just send me an email direct to adam@outofpodcast.com. But yeah, like I said, hit me up. If you have any thoughts, ideas, things you want to hear about, things you want to see, we are hopefully releasing a new video, or we hopefully, I guess by the time this had come out, we will have released a new video, theoretically, on YouTube on how to not mount a ski. It's just a joke. It's just stupid. Like, basically, I just put a bunch of holes in an old ski, basically, like, on the idea of things that I've heard over the years. Like, one of the things that somebody told me like pretty early on was that if you put WD-40 in your ski holes, it'll hold your screws better. And like, I think in any sane person's head, this doesn't make any sense. But it's something that I heard. So we figured we'd do it in the in the video. I also heard that like people are just like doing shit like with their drill bits. Like obviously the taping of the drill bits so that it doesn't go through your ski is one thing that people do. I've also seen people like just like mount their own, try to mount their own skis at home, like with just a random drill bit and then screw it in. So I kind of like took that and basically gave you like a very dramatized view of that, in the video. And yeah, there's just, it's basically just a bunch of, it's basically just saying, go to a ski shop, go to somebody that knows actually how to mount a ski, not your friend that you met on Facebook. That's a ski tech and has his own like tech garage, you know, like everybody can do that part of it. Everybody can build a garage and pretend they know what the fuck is up. But if they don't, shit gets squirrely. And I'm not saying your local shop knows what they're doing. A lot of them don't. Like there's, I mean, straight up, like that's part of it too. Like a lot of local shops don't know what's going on with a certain product. And I can tell you, like, I think every shop guy has had something come in to their store and been like, what is this again? You know, like the first time, right? So I'm not talking about that because I've done that, like where it's like a new binding and I have no idea like what the binding is. Like when the Dynafit Beast came out, I wanted to throw that fucking thing out the window. Like I wanted to take it and I wanted to like throw it up in the air and one swing with a baseball bat and just see how far I could hit it and see what would happen. Because like it was a nice idea in theory, right? It's like the same idea as like a shift, right? It's like a burly downhill binding, but like still uphill enough that it could be good. It's like the thing that everybody wanted and they just made it too fucking complicated. So the first time that came in, I was like, what do I do with this again? How do I, or mounting knee bindings. First time I mounted a knee binding, I was like, wait, why are we mounting posts first? Like what, like, is this 1912? Like, are, why are we like sticking shit out of the ski and then like sliding a binding on it and then like redo it? And like, I get it. It's fine. And also, why are we doing left and right skis? Like, I didn't know that was a thing. Super confusing the first time you mount anything, because it's not like, and this is the misconception I think in the ski industry too, I don't know how I got on this tangent, is that like all the time somebody, your rep or your tech rep, knows what's up and they're just like there helping you, teaching you the right way to do it. Like that's not the case. I wish it was, but it's not the case all the time. Certainly is sometimes, but it's, I would say a lot of the time is not. Because a lot of the time the rep's just like, I hope these techs figure it out. Like, I mean, straight up, like, that's kind of what ends up happening. And also, like, every rep's standard answer is like, yeah, no, it's great. It's fine. You know, this is really what we had in mind. Like, this is it. And then the next year when it's wrong, they'll be like, no, fuck that shit. It was dumb. Like, we made a mistake. Blah, blah. And I'm like, every time, I'm like, why? I told you this and I really tried to hammer that idea home. And I realized that you couldn't, like I realized that my opinion doesn't change anything, but also it would be cool to just have a regular conversation. So that's like the reps I really respect are like the ones that are like, hey, this is the way things are. It's shitty. I would recommend you either don't buy it or you buy it for a very specific person. Because a lot of the things that are shitty, quote unquote, shitty products, not that anybody's really saying that other than me, a lot of those things have like 1 to 5 people, like obviously this is like a made up, like this is just like a relative number that a product can be used for. I'm trying to think of a good, I mean, Beast bindings, for example, like that's probably a good one. Like there's certain people that the Beast actually really worked for. And if shit like kind of transferred over on your boot and you could change out the little clips easy enough and shit didn't get fucked up and you liked, you're okay with a binding that has more moving pieces and that's just a little burlier and heavy, then that's a good binding for you. Like if you're like this 280-pound super touring athlete that likes to send, but also needs a real touring binding, Beast probably was a good option for you, you know? And then you just figure out the rest of your stuff so that Beast binding worked good with it. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of products like that. I don't know how I got on this tangent. Sometimes like I just start talking and like I said, and now we're 9 minutes into it and this is what happens every time. All right, couple things. We have one sponsor for this episode. It's one of my favorite sponsors. It's the newest sponsor that we have, I think. And it's something that everybody uses. It's something that everybody needs in the ski industry and snowboard industry. Pearl Wax. Everybody needs Pearl Wax. I don't know. Well, you know what I mean. Everybody needs wax for their gear. This is my favorite wax. It's also a company for multiple reasons, right? It's simple. It's easy to know which one does what. There's not 700 variations of different wax. There's like 7 or 8, you know? Like that's a normal, like it's wax at the end of the day. We don't need to overcomplicate stuff. We need to make it really good. It needs to be good. Like it needs to be a good product. And it needs to do the job. And it also needs to be somewhat environmentally friendly. These guys make a biodegradable. Wow. Why was that so hard for me to say? Biodegradable wax, non-toxic, and it's PVC free. PVCs are basically like the stuff you find in high fluorinated waxes or fluorinated waxes. It's terrible for the environment, runs off into the rivers and into the water system, and it sticks around forever. Like it's just not good. That's why wax in general, it's like kind of the thing that people don't talk about enough, especially a lot of your like environmental heroes on Instagram that preach about all this shit don't care about. They don't talk about. They're like, yeah, I wax my stuff. Like I need high fluoro. It's just not good for you. It's not good for the environment. It's not good for you, especially if you're like, you're one of those guys that has your waxing basement that you like are huffing a bunch of wax fumes in. Definitely wouldn't use that stuff. Pearl Wax is a super environmentally dedicated company. They actually have a whole tab, like the third tab in, it's right, it's home, buy Pearl products, environment. Then it's all the other stuff. Like the main thing, like environment is a key part of what Pearl does and caring for the environment. They're also partnered with 1% for the Planet, which gives back 1% of the annual sales to environmental companies and organizations. So Pearl dedicates themselves to the environment. So that part I think is huge. They also make awesome wax. I mean, all that stuff is like kind of a, it is important, but people are going to ignore it if the product's not good. The product is great. It's used by a lot of your favorite mountains in their back shop. And now they're bringing this product to the retail floor. It has been at retail for a while. This is a super long ad read, I know, but I appreciate you guys listening to it because I actually feel pretty strongly about this and I'm super excited to have these guys on board. So you can show your support for Pearl and the show. Go to pearlwax.com, pearlwax.com, and then go to buy Pearl products, pick out your favorite stuff, and then use promo code out of bounds to save 20% on your first purchase. So make it a good one. Load up on it. Get some stuff for the season. This is the prime time to be buying some wax and getting yourself ready. Even if you don't buy it like with our code, take a look in your local shop for Pearl Wax and let them know that you heard it on the show. Maybe more shops will start bringing it in. I know my shop does. Like we carry it pretty, it's basically we carry two brands. We carry Pearl and we carry Swix essentially, and that's really it. Pearl stuff is my favorite. It has been for a while, so I'm super happy that Jill and the crew decided that they wanted to be a part of this. So once again, pearlwax.com, use promo code out of bounds to save 20%. And then also follow them on Instagram if you care about good content and all that stuff. All right. Episode 77 is finally underway with Mike Polito from RMU Skis. This episode was done in their beer garden in the back of RMU Breck. Mike is a great dude. We actually went on an awesome ride the day after we did this. Up Breck, down Copper, ended in Frisco. Ton of fun. I posted pictures on our Instagram when we did it. And yeah, I can't thank Mike enough for taking me out, letting me use bike, and coming on the show because it was a great talk. You can find him on Instagram. It's at Mike Polito. And then you can also, weird DMs. Mike Polito on Instagram, at RMU Outdoors on Instagram, at RMU Breck. Hit them up on the gram, hit them up on the internet. They've got some awesome skis. They make an awesome product, and it's just a cool company, and Mike's a good dude. So yeah, I guess that's it for now. Enjoy the episode. I'll talk to you after. Bye. Tell the people who you are, a little bit about yourself, and kind of give yourself the intro.
Cool, man. My name is Mike Polito. I work for RMU Outdoors. My business card says I'm the chief of Stoke. what that means really, it's not a real job title as much as it is just kind of encompasses just I guess I'm in charge of being a happy person and bringing stoke and happiness to the shop every day.
Yeah.
Keeping people's vibes up.
Yeah.
And but I do a lot of the buying here at our flagship store in Breckenridge. Okay. I run a retail shop, help with social media occasionally.
Yeah.
And yeah.
How long you been doing it?
I started working for RMU about 6.5 years ago.
Okay.
And I was our first rep on the West Coast. And I moved to Breckenridge last May. So I've been here about 1.5 years to help run our flagship store here.
Yeah.
And so I've kind of done a little bit of everything over the years. And now I'm here doing this and working in the shop. And yeah.
How do you like it?
I love it, man. It's I lived in Seattle for 6 years.
Oh, cool.
And so after being in the city for so long, kind of being in a mountain town is really refreshing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess Seattle's like, it's still the Pacific Northwest, but it's not really, it's not a mountain town. It's definitely like, it's a full-on city, about much of a city as it gets, I guess.
So. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty similar in size to, if I'm not mistaken, Boston. I think they're like pretty much the same size.
Similar
city.
Feel too. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, kind of, I guess. I think Seattle's a lot nicer than Boston is, and the people are a little nicer, a little less rough around the edges. But
I am a New Yorker, so don't get me going on Boston. That might get a little aggressive. But,
hey, I'm not committed to any Boston sports teams or anything like that. So like that's always where I think it gets a little shifty. Like I actually like grew up as a Yankees fan and a Lakers fan. Like so these are not things that like I have any connection to. Yeah. So it's a little tough, but Boston's definitely, it's a bit of a shit show, but I think it makes you better at something. It makes you better at dealing maybe not better at dealing with people. I think growing up in New England in general makes you really good at dealing with people, because
absolutely
you're dealing with more, and people are very hard, I guess, for like lack of a better term, it seems like.
Yeah,
but it's a different type of person out here too. Like in the mountain towns, it's like people are either like, the people that live here seem like very chilled out, very lax, mm-hmm. like whatever happens happens kind of, and then I guess you got all the people that just like are visitors, you know.
Yeah.
And that's it's a little different.
Breckenridge is definitely an interesting mountain town out of a lot of the little towns out here in Colorado. There's definitely a wide range of people because we're so close to Denver.
Mm.
And I'd say, like, really strangely enough, I grew up in upstate New York, and there's a lot of people from upstate New York who live out here.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of skiers. And this is probably, I'd say, Vail and Breckenridge market heavily to the East Coast crowd. So growing up, you know, I didn't hear a lot about, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, like, you didn't hear a lot about Telluride or Steamboat or Crested Butte as much as, like, you know, they spend a lot of money marketing Vail and Breckenridge to the East Coast.
Yeah, they definitely do. It's like it's the trip destination, even if the skiing's not that great. You know, and it's funny, like, Adam was just mentioning, like, Breckenridge has like an image of like being a beginner mountain, but like from the East Coast, that's not what they push Breckenridge as. It's like Breckenridge is like the place to go.
Right.
That's one of the options. So it's interesting to hear that, I guess, from that perspective, like being from this area or living in this area.
Yeah.
That's what people think. But, and I've never skied there, like I said, so I don't really have any perspective to offer on that. So,
yeah.
But what's the mountain like? Do you like, is this where you ski normally?
I kind of ski. I tend to backcountry ski probably 60 to 70% of my days. I do, you know, I have an Epic Pass every year, and I ski at Breckenridge because it's really hard to not just walk to the lifts and ski for, you know, really like laps. Skiing at like two in the afternoon to
really?
Four is really great because a lot of people have left for the day. And so if you're trying to like only get 2 hours of skiing in and bust out a bunch of hot laps, like it's really, really easy, good time of day to do that. But like I have, you know, a couple buddies in Vail. I'll ski over there occasionally, get out to Telluride and Aspen just because of the ski connections from back east.
Yeah.
All my friends who've moved out here, they live in all these different towns in Colorado. So we kind of couch surf and like, you know, just get to ski everywhere, which is really sweet.
Yeah.
But skiing Breckenridge is, you know, I think for core skiers, a lot of people trash talk it. But I think Breck is, you know, like we were talking about, there's definitely some really cool places to ski. The vert isn't bad. It's just a lot of the steep stuff, you really have to kind of go find it. and do a little bit of searching out there. But if you know where to go, it's, I mean, I had one of the deepest days of my life last year at Breckenridge, which is crazy. That's not really something that's like normal. And, you know, I was at Squaw in 2011 when they got like 900 inches.
Yeah.
And I skied deeper snow here last year than that. And I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Granted, last year was crazy, but
it's a good year. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. we had like not a good year last year. Like it started fucking awesome. Like it started about as good as you can hope for.
Mm-hmm.
Like in November, I think it was like I had probably 3 pow days in November, and like that never happens in New England. Like real pow days, you know, like 10 inches, 8 inches, 12 inches, like all that. And the rest of the season was just kind of like felt like a bummer, kind of like it was just like everything, the bar was set pretty high, and then it just like there was some rain around Christmas and it got warm, and it was just try to get out of there as much as possible.
The temperature swings back east, that's what
I
remember. I you know, like growing up, like skiing, it'd be like cool, you have this like 2-3 foot storm and then immediately rain like 2 days later, and like all of that base is just kind of trash from it. And
do you go back east at all?
I do, yeah.
You my kind of make your rounds?
Yeah, my folks still live in Albany.
Okay.
And my dad, especially because I live out here now, he gets an epic pass. And we used to ski Stowe a lot. I went to University of Vermont, so I skied there a lot in college as well. And so I try to get back to do a week with my folks up there every winter and ski Stowe and visit friends in Burlington. So
sick.
Yeah.
How I've been trying for a while now to get opinions on like this whole pass thing, like the conglomerate pass deal that's been going on over the last few years. What do you think about this? Like there's Icon Pass and everybody's buying everybody and Epic Pass. And I'm like a little conflicted, I guess. Like I like it and I think it can be really good.
Yeah.
But I also think it can be really bad because like everybody's like all the smaller mountains seem to be like either getting bought out or they like have to be part of this big pass or else it's like, why would you go there?
There's a bunch of different op-eds like floating around now too.
Yeah.
And people are almost like responding to these articles.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was like Outside Online. I saw someone had written something that, you know, like the Epic Pass is actually really good for skiing. And then like a month later, I think it was literally someone else who wrote for the same magazine.
Yeah.
Wrote like a counterpoint or something like that. It's really I'm very conflicted personally on it. It's really tough when you live in Breckenridge, for example, where like if like to get a ski pass, like it's I'm getting the Epic Pass because it's right here.
Yeah.
So it's in that regard, like I have no choice just because of where I live. I think where people are really noticing it is in a lot of the smaller place. Like Breckenridge is a huge town, so to speak, for a mountain town. We're close to Denver. It's going to be busy no matter what. But, you know, like I have a lot of friends out in Telluride, for example, and Aspen. And so, like, Telluride, you know, I think they're 7 day on the full Epic Pass now. And what they've noticed is it's holiday periods and weekends are starting to get way more volume than they have ever gotten.
Yeah.
And again, you know, it's all, you have to take it all in because it's one of those things where it's like, I mean, naturally most ski areas are going to get busier and busier as more people get into the sport. And Aspen, I guess there's like this big thing going on over in Aspen right now with like, the locals hating on the Icon Pass because they're like, I think Aspen and Telluride, both those places they're so far from Denver that historically it's like, holidays and weekends are busier, but I mean, it's a 2-foot storm day at either of those places, and really
people couldn't get there.
Especially growing up on the East Coast, man, lift lines out here are nothing compared to back home.
Really?
Absolutely not.
That's what he was just saying, like the 45-minute thing. I was like, I don't wait for 45 minutes all the time. Like I wait on a weekend. Like that's not that abnormal, you know?
Yeah.
So
people complain at Breckenridge about lift lines, and I'm like, have you ever skied on the East Coast?
Yeah.
Like,
have you skied Stowe on a powder day when they shut the gondola down for a
Saturday powder day?
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Like.
You're
it's mayhem. Like people are like literally ready to beat the shit out of each other in the lift line. You're just like, okay, cool.
Yeah. So anyway, like, I guess I rambled for a little bit, but
that's how this goes.
The pass, I don't hate on the pass. But I think that, I think a lot of places need to kind of be mindful of what, you know, the people who actually, you know, the local economies. There's a lot of people who are affected by that. Businesses, I'm sure, are doing really well. Like our flagship store, we do great. We, you know, we have a lot of people in town.
Yeah. Yeah, it's important for business.
It is. Yeah. It is. But I think the resorts also have, you know, like Vail Resorts, and I feel like a lot of these resorts associated with Icon really should also take a responsibility on understanding that the quality of what they're bringing to the resort is maybe diminishing a little bit because of the volume of people.
Yeah, no, I think it's important for business, and like I think part of it's a responsibility thing too of like the people that are putting on these passes to like make sure that there's a way for the mountain towns that are normally not that busy during some of these times to manage the traffic flow. Mm-hmm. So like the people that actually live there and like make the effort to live there year round, because it's not always the easiest thing living in a mountain town. I mean, I think everybody that lives in a mountain town kind of knows that, because you're like, you're waiting tables or you're like doing other jobs. You're like doing whatever you can so you can ski as much as you possibly can. That's part of the reason I think a lot of people are in this industry.
Right.
Is, I would hope, you know, is the skiing. So it makes it, it is kind of a bummer sometimes when your local hill that's normally not that busy is all of a sudden like flooded. Like there's that image of Jackson that was like viral last year that like Uninterrupted or whatever put up and was like, it was just this huge mob of people like waiting at the tram. Like
they're on Icon, right?
They're on Icon too.
Yeah. Yeah, that so was cause they're having a really big problem with that.
Yeah. That's like, what I'm saying. Yeah. So like in like at home, tons of my buddies that normally like don't travel at all to ski are like, I bought this Icon pass. I'm going to fucking use it. You know?
Yeah.
Like I'm going to book a trip somewhere and I'm going to go. So on one hand, it's probably great for the economy overall, like the local economy. But on the other hand, it's like you're getting a lot of people that normally, you know, barely ski their home mountain.
Yeah.
But it's like a weird thing to complain about because people are skiing, and that's what we always say, like, we need more of in this industry anyway.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's a weird thing. I just wanted to see what you thought about it. Everybody seems to have, like, a different opinion on it, I think. So
I think what they really – where they make a lot of the money on the passes is people like my folks who still live in the East Coast, right? My dad is 73 years old and still skis 40, 50 days a year. And if he's going to buy a season pass to somewhere, I mean, he might as well do the Epic because Mount Snow is an hour and a half away.
Right.
And then he can come out here and visit me, and then he doesn't have to pay for skiing.
Right.
But even those people, you know, they're still going to make money on food at the very least.
Right.
And I don't think he's the exact example because, you know, there's a lot of people who are going to pay for hotels out here and
right
Airbnbs or whatever. But
right. Yeah. I think those are the people that are probably benefiting it.
Yeah.
Those are the people that are like fueling the machine the most, you know? So I don't know, but it's important. Anyway, how'd you get into the industry? Like, how did you start working in skiing?
Well, I mean, like I've been skiing since I was 3 years old. So it's always been, you know, I always loved skiing, but, I went to University of Vermont and dropped out of college and immediately started working at a shop called the Outdoor Gear Exchange
in Burlington. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm definitely not the first person with that story, specifically
at that shop.
From UVM to OGE.
It's a great shop.
Yeah, it is really a great shop. And the two guys who own that place are still good friends of mine. And, you know, I feel like they definitely took a chance on me. I was probably 20 years old maybe, and just started working as a ski tech and then ran their backcountry department for a little bit.
Yep.
And I didn't do anything for a little bit. I moved to Seattle after that.
Yep.
And really kind of happenstance, a buddy of mine had moved to Breckenridge and was sitting down with our CEO and founder and eating barbecue pulled pork and literally called me on the phone with like a mouthful of pulled pork and was like, dude, you got like, I'm sitting here and like, have you heard of RMU? Like they're looking for a rep and like you should hit this guy up, dude. Give him a call tomorrow. And I was like, all right, dude.
Yeah, I'll give him a call. I'll call him right away. Yeah.
And with my buddy Nick Chaffee, who actually wound up working for RMU for a couple of years as well. And then that was kind of it. I kind of called these guys up and did an interview over the phone, and then just kind of happened. So
I worked
in a couple shops over the years, and then RMU. But that's kind of
what is RMU like? What's their like kind of brand identity? I mean, because there's a lot of that. Like that's super important, especially lately. It seems like the customers are like they're really gravitating towards brands that kind of have a story. So what's RMU's story?
We have a really cool story. I'll get to the brand identity part in a minute, because that's something that I think is shifting a little bit for us recently. But
yeah, I've noticed that actually.
But yeah. Yeah. We definitely still have our roots as a ski company, but 10 years ago, RMU got started by a bunch of buddies who were kind of painting houses. You know, our CEO and founder, Mike, another Mike, actually was a firefighter professional.
Okay.
And they got the ski press and kind of were like, had this business where they just built some skis, you know, trade for beer.
Right.
And then all of a sudden they were kind of onto something. And so one summer they spent, you know, painting houses, you know, earning, you know, X amount of dollar, you know, make up like 20 grand to do a production run. Mm. And then it kind of slowly took off from there. Like, we started doing a production run, and that was in 2008, I think they started pressing skis, and I came around in 2012 or I think 2013. And at that point, the RMU, it kind of turned into a, you know, a proper ski company. Like, you know, we had reps around the country.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're pressing skis, working with ski shops, doing that thing. And then to get into the brand identity thing, probably around three, four years ago, we started expanding our product offering. So we started designing backpacks in-house. A lot of us mountain bike in the summer, and that's like a huge part of what we do. So, you know, it took a couple of years to fully get it going, but, you know, this past summer in our flagship store, we opened, you know, a full service bike shop in our ski shop and bar. And we actually designed a 15 liter mountain bike pack this past year. So our brand identity now is I'd say we consider ourselves a four season mountain culture outdoor company.
Yeah.
You know, the beer component here at our flagship store, we have, you know, high end cocktails and rotating drafts. We kind of, that's what we do. You get back from a bike ride or you get off the hill and you have a beer and hang out with friends. And that's kind of, you know, the all encompassing thing of playing outside and spending time with your friends.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, it's awesome. Like, it's actually like a pretty legit spot. Like, it's not like just a lot of places like have just like a random bar kind of set up.
Yeah.
There's like a couple beers like maybe on tap, or like maybe just like a couple beers in cans behind the bar. But like,
yeah,
this is like a legit setup, which I think is fucking awesome. Like,
yeah.
And I think, so how much of what you guys do is like actual branding stuff, and how much of it is the skis themselves? Like, because I'm starting to see more and more of like the hats and the clothing and like the software, you start to see more. And I don't know if the Instagram name changed too, where it's like RMU Outdoors or like from RMU Ski or whatever it was before, but I feel like has it changed? Am I right? Or am I just making that up?
We are RMU Outdoors. On Instagram.
Right. Did that change?
Now. That changed. Okay, cool. Probably, right. I want to say within the last 2 years.
Okay. Cool.
And that definitely represents a shift in kind of who we see ourselves as.
Right.
We, you know, at our flagship store, we do a lot of, logo wear and things like that. You know, we're not into like technical outerwear or anything like that. That's such a huge endeavor for a company to get into.
Yeah.
We've kind of met people along the way that have really kind of, we've just been really lucky to meet. And so, for example, the bar, right? We wanted to open this flagship store with the bar. We just met a friend of a friend. Our CEO met a friend of a friend at a wedding who specializes in like restaurant management and bar management.
Yeah.
And so instead of just having a couple taps when we opened this location, it turned into like, we're going to do high-end cocktails. We're going to have, you know, 12 rotating drafts and like constantly have different like high-end, really cool beers coming in through here.
Hmm.
And then around the same time, we crossed paths. This guy, Joe, who's our design manager now, who used to work for North Face and Kelty. And we're like, well, let's start making backpacks that we get, like, let's design our backcountry ski bag. So that first backpack we designed was a 35 liter multi-use like backcountry pack.
Right.
And so that's something we specialize in now. I'd say we definitely put a lot into our backpacks and our skis.
Right.
You know, we definitely have hats, t-shirts, like any other outdoor company
stuff,
or anything like that. But we're not quite into, you know, high end.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, shells or anything like that. Yeah.
Right. It's not a boutique, really. It's like, it's a ski shop, I guess, at the end of the day. And you guys just sell. So you kind of mentioned it earlier. Like, how's it been being like a retail shop and being a brand that also makes skis? Like, how is it working with other companies? Like, are they like, what do you want from us now? Like, you want to buy stuff and sell against us? Like, is that like an issue or can you talk about that?
It's a little weird, man. I'm going gray, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
In the past 3 years, so I'm getting a lot of gray hairs. The way I would put it is like working retail in a resort town is a crazy business, and working in a bar in a retail in a ski town is a crazy business, and we do both at the same time.
Yeah.
And then we threw in the bike shop this year.
Which is also,
it's just crazy, man. It's absolutely crazy. It's really fun and interesting. And, you know, I feel like the luckiest person in the world that I get to kind of constantly be moving around and being creative and doing a lot of these
bored.
Things. Exactly. Yeah. Right. It's definitely not boring. There's definitely moments, you know, at like 1 AM on a Friday night where I want to pull my hair out.
Yeah.
When we're like pushing out, frat boy A who's visiting from New York City and is like blacked out drunk
can't
and like,
walk exactly and doesn't understand why he's being kicked out
exactly. That's kind of one of those moments where I'm like, oh man, this is why am I doing this,
but those happen everywhere, I think, though. Like they have, well, especially in a bar, I guess that's one of the hard things, so I don't know, man.
I'd be lying though if I said you know, being able to offer a beer while someone shops around, I'd liken it to like wedding dress shopping. Not that I've done that before,
but it's the same idea.
But you know how they give like champagne to brides when they're shopping for wedding dresses, to kind of ease them over for spending $10,000 on a wedding dress.
Yeah,
it's nice to be able to drink a beer while you're contemplating a $1,000 ski setup purchase.
We have like a similar. So we do a thing called the Big E. I don't know if you know what that is.
No.
It's the New England State Fair, basically. So it's actually happens to be in Western Mass, like West Springfield. So we attend. It's like all tons of beer vendors, food vendors. It's like a regular state fair, but it's like for all of New England.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like on a given Saturday, like it's 2.5-3 weeks long, and there's like 100,000 to 200,000 people a day there. So it's just a fucking shit ton of people, and everybody's like, people basically just go there to eat and drink and buy random things they don't need. So we just finished that. That's like all of that literally takes up, like between setup, takes up our whole September.
Wow.
So we don't close the shop. We leave the shop open, but it's like a ghost town in there, and we run like skeleton crew there. But we notice
no
that
staff.
For sure.
We just leave the doors open. No one's working.
No one's coming in anyway. So, I mean, it's like we sell like we just basically do bike service.
Please
and that's
leave money
it.
On the counter.
Yeah, it's on our system for that month. Because like we're seeing a bajillion people. And the interesting thing is like it's kind of like a mix of that. Like it being good that people are super drunk, because at the Big E, like people are driving a ways and they're coming and they're tired. They're waiting in traffic.
Yeah.
They're annoyed about waiting in line. They're annoyed about paying for $10 beers. But they all end up blackout still. Like everybody's like, it's not abnormal to see someone like at 9 AM on a Saturday morning, like already blackout somehow.
Oh yeah.
Cause they serve all day. But it makes the ski selling part pretty easy, but also kind of obnoxious sometimes. So I wish it was like a little more controlled, I guess, like this kind of environment where you're like offering someone a beer as opposed to them like being 10 deep and like,
oh yeah.
Then we get so many emails afterwards that are like, hey, I bought snowboard last night. I don't even know how to snowboard. I don't know why I bought a snowboard. Can I return it? And we're just like, that's not like somebody wasted an hour of their life with you. You know, they actually next to us, they sell hot tubs. Like there's this like, I don't even know how big it is, but it's got like 100-foot ceilings, you know, double decker, chandeliers in it, all this shit, right? And they sell like 25 hot tubs a day or something.
What?
Yeah, hot tubs at the Big E, you know, and they're not cheap ones either. They're like, you know, a few grand each.
Yeah.
And like they sell out. I mean, this year I think they did 300 hot tubs for the fair.
Yeah.
It's like, how the fuck? Like, but people are just there. They're spending money because they're like, they're loosened up and they're like, fuck, you know, it'd be nice right now. Hot tub.
Hot tub.
But that's what it is. So we just finished that. So it's funny you say that. And that's like, that's pretty fresh on my mind. It's a pretty.
Yeah, call me crazy, but I just bought a hot tub.
Yeah.
At the fair?
At the state fair. Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
Sure. Yeah. There's a lot of weird shit there, but hot tub, there's like, I want, and that's just the one next to us. That's not, there's like 10 or 12 booths there that sell hot tubs. Like, and it's not that big of an area either. It's just like, it's a super bizarre. But I mean, we saw a shit ton of skis there. It's great for us. It's good for the business. But it's like all of the staff is just like so shot by the end of it, you know?
So is this thing like a, is it a lot of vendors from like a bunch of different
wherever,
industries?
All around the country, yeah. From like, you do whatever. You can sell hats, you can sell t-shirts, yeah. You can sell...
Is there entertainment?
Yeah, there's like, there was actually, so Bowling for Soup performed one night. Nice. Foreigner performed one night. Like, there's some pretty legit, like, I mean, it's Foreigner. Basically like people that are a little washed up, that were big at one point, all performed there. Like, and they have a big stage. They actually have like 5 or 6 stages, but like, and it's serious. It's in West Springfield. West Springfield's not a huge town. Like, the population of West Springfield's got to be like 25,000 or something, which is like decent, but it's not for a city, you know? So, but then you add, you know, 100,000 people to that from out of town, you know, from all across New England. Holy and it's shit. Just like, it's,
I'm trying to put together this person, right?
Yeah.
Who's like super into Foreigner, going to buy a hot tub and totally. Probably also skis.
Yeah.
And like, that's their weekend.
And we're like prime time spot. So the bar next to us is 2 floors. Yeah. So it's got an elevator in it. Like, so there's a full-on elevator in like a pop-up tent. You know, they set it up 2 weeks before. There's nothing there normally. And they just fucking assemble an elevator in there. It's a double-decker bar. So... that's on one side, and it's huge, and we're like in the middle, like this little, I mean, it's like a 60 by 30 or something, so it's not a small tent, but it's a tent, you know? And then on the other side, you have this like massive hot tub place, and that's just like part of it, you know? And like, there's like animal shows and like all this stuff, like petting zoos inside of it. Dude, it's everything. If you end up in Western Mass in September, go, because it's worth seeing just like the amount of just animals, people and real animals that are there. Like, it's a crazy thing. Maybe RMU wants to set up a spot there, huh? Sell some skis.
This is going to go way off the rails real quick.
Yeah.
I can't get over the hot tub thing.
Yeah,
it's crazy. We joke about, like, with so, like $1,000 ski print, right? So skis and bindings, you know, most companies, you'll be spending about $1,000,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right.
And so that's something that, you know, someone will be in here. And I'm not talking about, you know, someone will be sober, like, having sipping on a beer. And, you know, get to the point where, like, oh, man, I'd like to get a setup. I've been thinking about it for a while, and it's like that for me personally. It's crazy to think I would never walk in and just spend $1,000, much as have $1,000 to spend.
Yeah, right.
But with a bike, that happens too. And someone's like, you know, like, oh, you know what? I've been thinking about this for a while, and like, yeah, you know, fuck it. Like, here's $4,000. I'm gonna buy a $4,000 bike, and but like a hot tub is like one of those things. Yeah, it's a lot of money, but also like. Have you thought about the logistics? Like,
no.
Have you ever had a hot tub?
No.
Yeah, dude, it's you need to like the electrical.
I almost buy one every year, and I do not have money to buy hot tubs. Yeah. So like, I can't imagine because they have like these awesome financing offers. So if you had money, and you were like, oh, I can just pay for it in 12 months, and I don't have to pay interest, and you're just like, it actually makes logical sense as someone with money, I guess. There's so
it's like buying a
few
boat,
hundred,
though.
Dude. Like, that's not a small amount of hot tubs, you know. So yeah, the whole place is like that, and people come. Like, I've sold packages to people, where like. You know, I'm thinking they're wasting my time, and then they just fucking pull out this like stack of cash that could basically buy the store, you know?
Yeah.
And you're just like, I guess people plan for this, you know?
Yeah.
And same thing with bikes. Like, I mean, I sold a couple Santa Cruzes there, like at the Biggie. And it's like, why are we doing, like, how do we do this? And then, like, most days you're like, why are we even here? Like, this is not our clientele for the most part. Cause like maybe 5% of people are skiers or 10% of people are skiers or whatever, but sell a lot of hats, sell a lot of Trump skis and jeans hats from Vivona, but yeah.
Oh my God.
That's how it goes. It's a pretty insane thing. Well, let's do some Instagram questions because you have 7,000. And if I don't ask at least a few of them.
Yeah, to clarify to everyone listening right now, I have a bunch of friends who are, think they're comedians too. These are
gonna be weird. There's a few really.
Yeah.
There's a few ones that I might skip just for the
sake appropriateness?
Oh yeah, some are like. I'll show you all of them afterwards, but I'm telling you, Will sent literally 70, and he also sent like the same one 4 or 5 times in a row. So at some points, like,
what would K2 do if they found out what Will was writing on the internet?
Yeah, that's a good point. They're gonna find out. I know somebody from K2 listens. Yeah, that's it. It's over. Somebody from K2 listens to this shit. I know that. It's gotta be. All right, let's start with Will since we're talking about that one. All right, Wally_hats wants to know, what's the worst part about Summit County?
Oh, man.
I'll give you an alternate one, too. What's your stance on arm strap mounted water bottles?
Okay, the worst part about Summit County, I think, there's not a lot of I love living in Summit County. I'd say off the top of my head, the worst thing about Summit County is maybe the lack of There's not, like, we have a little music venue back here, right, in our beer garden.
Right.
But we don't have something like Aspen, like, what am I thinking of? Oh, it's going to kill me. This is so embarrassing. They have a sick music venue that just, like, all these world-class acts come to.
Yeah.
Like, people like Neil Young, like, major, major people will go and play through there. Belly Up.
Okay.
And we don't have anything like that in Summit County. So I, like, you know, wish someday. I'm a big music fan, so. And then regarding the arm, what is arms, what do you arm, call it? What,
yeah, how do you feel? What's your stance on arm strap water bottles?
So I started doing a little bit more lightweight, fast and light ski touring this past winter and started using having a water bottle on my chest strap in my backpack, and yep. which was pretty nerdy by a lot of people's accounts.
Yeah.
So I got to say, man, don't knock until you try it. It's actually really nice when you're like, even regular ski touring, you need to stop and grab water and don't have to take your backpack off.
Right.
And I can't stand a Camelback in the winter because the hose just freeze. So having a water bottle right there, ready to go. Nice try, Wally.
It's a good thing. Yeah, he's trust me, like if we need to like make him win one of these, he's got 700 of them. First name Bennett wants to know, why is Fish the greatest band of all time?
Oh man. There's no right answer to that.
Okay.
Fish is the greatest band of all time because of the talent of all four of the musicians. All four of those guys are equally really, really good at their individual instruments.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to a Fish show?
No.
Yeah. There's going to a Fish show is like going to a stadium full of people where you can get as messed up as you want to.
Yeah.
And you're still not going to be the most fucked up person there.
Yeah.
Which is really
nice.
I can
see that.
You can kind of like let loose and like not really worry about it because there's always going to be someone who looks like a complete Looney Tune. Pretty much, yeah. And the music's great. Yeah.
I actually don't think I've even ever intentionally listened to any Fish. Like, I just haven't ever. I mean, I'm also like, how old are you?
32.
Okay. I'm a little younger than you. I'm 24, so yeah. It's maybe not my
generationally,
age.
Yeah. I'm on even on the younger side, I feel like, of a lot of Fish fans.
Yeah. We had a dude that managed our shop in West Springfield that was like a huge Fish guy. Like always, like anytime they'd be in like anywhere near us, he was there. You know, like he was huge, huge into it, and he was about that age too. Like he's like maybe 35 or something now. So
yeah.
Maybe it's a generational thing.
It's like the Dead. I mean it's
yeah.
definitely different music, but it's one of those things where I have friends who are into Fish, and they keep trying to turn, like, the worst thing about Fish fans is they try to turn people into believers, so to
yeah,
speak.
Yeah,
and they're,
yeah.
He did and they're do that not, to me, too. They're yeah, not good at it.
Yeah.
And I'm never going to try to force Fish on people, but I'd say go to a show, and it's a pretty fun experience.
Awesome. Yeah. All right, let's see what else we got here. It's hard to sift through all the Wally Hats questions. all right. This is a good one, I think. Cody Cirillo wants to know, have you ever thought about going as Freddie Mercury for Halloween? Is there a story behind that? Like,
I've probably known Cody for about a year, and I've had a mustache this past year for most of that year.
Okay.
And I don't know. I'd be Freddie Mercury for Halloween. That'd be an easy costume. I have a beard now, though, so that's kind of...
Yeah, you'd have to ditch it.
In the winter, I grow a beard, so I don't have to wear a face mask.
I guess that...
Functional. Functional
yeah,
beard.
Very yeah. functional. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Let's see. There's a little more technical of a question, maybe. I don't know if there's a story behind it or not. Rob_Ruttinger? Rudy Gear? I don't know. Pivot or no pivot? I don't know what that means.
Pivot or no pivot?
I don't know if it means bindings or it means...
If it's a telly question...
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Let me see if he's a telly skier.
I don't know.
I was wondering if you knew this guy or not.
I was a tele skier for a long time, which is
he says
no surprise.
Skier. Maybe that's what
that
he's talking
like
about.
I like fish as well, but
yeah. How do you feel about tele skiing? I had a guy on a couple weeks ago that was just we were talking about tele skiing and if it's ever going to come back. You think it's coming back or no?
I think the biggest advantage to tele skiing historically was the access to backcountry skiing, and I think
that's going away.
The advent of the tech binding is really people are like tele's dying because of what it is, and it's like no, it's the AT. Market of what you can do with backcountry skiing is completely evolved is what's killed telly.
Yeah, it's Telly also is like a little uncomfortable for people too. It's like, it's uncomfortable for people to look at. It's uncomfortable for people to learn, I think. So, and it's like, and there's also not a lot of people to just like go, hey, like I need to learn how to telly ski.
Yeah.
So I had like a couple of buddies like growing up that were like, yeah, I'm gonna learn how to telly ski. And like, they did it for like, I don't know, a week or something. And then they were just like, fuck this shit. Like I'm out, no more.
Yeah.
All right.
Telly, I guess if that's a look pivot question, I don't know, I guess.
How do you feel about look pivots? We can do that too.
I don't know, man. I've had one pair, I think. Alpine bindings to me, I actually did Telly for a long time. So I only started Alpine skiing again probably 3-4 years ago.
Okay.
And that bindings changed a little bit for sure. I mean, the pivot design has always been pretty similar, but
yeah.
I don't know, man. I have nothing. Like, I ski Marker right now. They're great.
Yeah,
everyone always has an opinion about everything.
Yeah.
And they always have a horror story.
Yeah.
And I feel like really most Alpine bindings are pretty good bindings.
They
like,
work.
It's 2019. Yeah. There's pretty good technology out there.
I definitely have been a pretty big proponent of like shitting on Marker. Mm-hmm. Not like just shitting on them for no reason. It's just that I feel like as big as they are and as good as they are, they could be better at a lot of things.
Yeah.
Like, and that's actually how I feel about the Kingpin.
Yeah.
Which is part of the reason I asked you about that one earlier.
Yeah.
It was like, I hate when they just do shit to do new shit.
Yeah.
And I already didn't like the Kingpin before because I've had issues with it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know. I'm like, everybody does have an opinion on these things. And I think almost none of the opinions actually matter. Like, it's like everybody has one and everybody thinks that their opinion needs to go right to the top. And like, Marker needs to know about this. Like, Marker needs to hear about it. And you hear that so much in the
read.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody has a platform now. So that, I think that part's interesting too. So I don't know.
Well, from a manufacturer standpoint, like, remember, we're a ski shop, but we're also a manufacturer, right?
And right.
So, like, a lot of – it's really hard the first couple of years working for RMU. It's like any company out there, especially small companies, it's really hard to kind of not get offended when you get a lot of, like, you know, negative feedback because it exists. Like, we – I'd say for the most part, we get a lot of positive feedback. We get a lot of praise, good press.
Right.
But – you know, there's negative stuff out there on the internet, and it's, you know, it's one of those things you just take it with a grain of salt and accept it for what it is. The interesting thing that with the tech bindings, I feel like as a particular, people really latch on to what's the best backcountry binding now.
Yeah.
And because like with Alpine bindings, generally speaking, you have different technology, but they all do the same thing.
Yeah.
And they all more or less work the same way.
Right.
And backcountry bindings are kind of like, like the Shift and
everybody's
the Kingpin. I know. And honestly, man, I have pretty strong opinions about it. I have nothing against that binding, but I think if you have a one ski quiver, that's a great binding.
Yeah.
If you're buying a backcountry setup to be a backcountry setup only, I think that binding is overkill.
Yeah.
I think the Marker Kingpin's overkill for that.
Yeah.
I think like a Dynafit rotation,
like a
radical binding.
Even an SD10, I think is fine for most
any of
people.
Those, you're skiing soft snow in the backcountry.
Yeah.
I tore it on a Dynafit Rotation 12 last winter for a lot of it, and I had 100% confidence I could ski anything I wanted and didn't even think about it.
Yeah.
So.
Do you lock yours, or do you just run it?
I used to, and then I started testing not doing it. If I know I'm going to hit a cliff, mandatory drop, I'll probably lock it, and I know, like, because the problem with tech bindings is if you're going probably over 10, 15 feet in a cliff, you're going to land like
a little back.
A little back. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to say back seat, but you're going to land back and it'll pre-release out of most of those tech toes.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing stopping it from coming out of the top.
Right.
Which is, I guess, where the Shift is pretty sweet because you're kind of like you have that Alpine toe when you're actually skiing, but.
Yeah, I like that Shift, but there's a lot of issues with it too, you know? Like, it's not short of issues on its own. Like, I've seen a thousand Instagram stories where somebody's like, fucking awesome, and the brakes are off. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like it's falling. Yeah. Or they're like trying to put it back together with Vollet straps, and I'm like, it's a $600 binding, you know?
Yeah.
Like a, plus, it's $650, I think, this year, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot of money for a binding that may not work. And I know a lot of tech bindings are that expensive now, but it's like, that's a lot of money for a product that should be fairly simple, you know? So. It's a weird thing. How do you feel about that Cast system? Have you seen that? Have you used that at all?
Yeah. Those are a couple of those guys are Vermont guys too.
Yeah.
I think that system's great.
I like that system a lot. I'm trying to test it out a little bit, but
yeah.
So
it's a little bit more moving pieces. Like the only thing is, it is really not, like, so where I live in Blue River, just up the road, like yeah. backcountry ski out in my backyard.
Yeah.
And I really like the more that I ski these days, I kind of like the ease of use of just like not having to do too many things when I transition from going uphill to downhill.
Right.
Okay. And the only knock on the cast is, you know, you have to take the toe piece off.
Yeah.
And put the other toe piece back on.
It is an additional step. Yeah.
But other than that, man, it's a sweet, I mean, I'm pretty surprised that, I wonder if they get offers to buy that company. Like I'm surprised to hear that they're still independent, which is great for them, but it's a sweet design.
It's a great design, but it's not very, they're not very good at promotion, I don't think.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the reason they probably haven't been bought out. Cause like, if you look at the brand, you're like, this is a great idea, but they don't really seem like they have a lot of following in it, but I've seen a bunch of people using it. So I don't know. I'm a little, it's another thing. I guess I'm conflicting on all these fucking things. So, All right, let's try two more.
I mean, you can go to Looney Tune questions for sure.
Okay. Yeah. There's one that I'm like a little curious about, but I don't know this person. Hi, Mike. Longtime listener, first time caller here. tell us about one time an our Instagram celebrity dumped you. How did it happen? What does that mean? Do you know what that means?
I don't know.
Did an Instagram celebrity dump you?
I don't know what that means. C underscore urchin. Urchin. Yeah, that's another Will. That's another Seattle Will, actually.
Okay.
I guess. So one of my ex-girlfriends, who is now I would call Instagram famous person, who's great girl. That was one of, I think I've gone through a couple of relationships at this point that are casualties of like grinding for RMU.
Mm-hmm.
And, that was one of those where it was just one of those situations. I was young and, I won't go into detail.
Yeah, okay,
I
mean, cool. I wasn't sure what...
25-year-old Mike is a different person than 32-year-old Mike, for sure.
I'm sure. I'm sure it is. Yeah. Favorite Teletubby? Was there anything behind that? It's from Beer and Lollipops.
Ooh, that's Joe. That's our designer.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Yeah.
Favorite Teletubby? The red one.
What's the red one's
shape.
Name? Yeah, what shape? Is there a shape?
I don't know the names.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. Poe. Aren't they all named Poe? Lala. Lala's one of them. I don't know.
Yeah.
Lala, Poe. Tinky Winky. There you go. I'm getting them. I got three, dude. I got three off the top. I've only seen that show, like, as a small child, so I don't know.
Joe has two small kids, which is I'm sure he's very fluent in Teletubby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm
going to make him a t-shirt that says fluent.
That's a good one. Yeah. RMU should make that and sell the shit. Or you should make it and sell the shit out of it. All right. We'll do two more since those are short ones. What Finno wants to know, Brian Finno 13, for those of you that don't know who Finno is. What happened on the Opus Hut trip a while back?
Oof, that's a rough one. I think we went on a hut trip to Opus, which is, if you don't know where that is, it's out near Telluride. It's on Ophir Pass.
Okay.
And it's this like incredible, incredible area. Like there's nothing out there. It's just the hut and a ton of great like backcountry skiing. And we went out, a group of us, a bunch of RMU guys and a couple of friends. And I was living in Golden at the time. So like right outside of Denver.
Mm.
And I guess this was the first time I got altitude sick, which is crazy.
Yeah,
because I was living at like, you know, a mile up, and the elevation at Opus Hut is 12 something, I think.
Okay.
And we got up there totally fine, and then I spent the first like night, and then the second day like up all night puking from like being messed up from the altitude, like really messed up. And it was really strange because I had never experienced altitude sickness. Like, I consider myself a pretty fit person.
Yeah.
And I, you know, obviously altitude sickness, like, can affect anyone anywhere.
Yeah.
There's like world class athletes that can just like randomly just get it on Everest or whatever. And But 12,000 feet is not very high. And it was pretty embarrassing. It was just really funny. Like, a bunch of my friends were just giving me shit because it was like perfect conditions. And I was just inside puking all day.
Ugh, and that's such a bummer.
Yeah, dude, it was bad. I mean, I sleep at 10,000 feet now, too.
Yeah, so and it's not, like, it shouldn't be an issue.
12,000 feet is like.
It's not a big gain. Yeah. Yeah. That should be weird.
Yeah.
All right, last one will be about the new pack. Luke Copa. Wants to know, is there anything that you learned from designing skis that was useful in developing packs?
Have had input on some skis and, backpacks in the past. I definitely am not sitting there doing drawings and like actually designing things. But I'd say from what I've seen with our skis, the design process is definitely different. However, the whole process of designing a ski shape, prototyping it, communicating back and forth, talking to our athletes, getting feedback from friends of the business, that all of that with designing our skis over the years definitely helped a lot with starting to design backpacks. But I will say with a sandwich construction ski, that I feel like is a pretty simple procedure to design a new shape and a new ski compared to a lot of the crazy stuff that goes into designing a backpack, because you have to think about there's a billion different materials you could use in a backpack.
Right.
Like different waterproofing materials, different types of plastics, nylons. There's like 50,000 different buckles you could do. Like how many centimeters away from the chest and up and down of the chest is the chest strap going to be. There's so many little things that goes into designing a pack that I think we had a good baseline. Yeah. And again, Joe comes from, some pretty big companies, so he has a pretty good process down, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
It definitely, the process of design in general helps, but nothing could have prepared us for designing backpacks.
I don't think anybody would have expected that answer either. Like, I think most people would be like, oh, skis is way harder. Backpacks are just fucking backpacks. Yeah. Well, that's cool. That's good to know, I guess. But I guess it makes sense, right? Like, there's a lot of shit that goes into it. And there's a lot of small, like, kind of nuanced things, I guess, that you kind of have to do. Like, even just the chest strap, like you said.
Details. And then, does it look good?
Right.
Like, does it look clean?
Yeah.
And, like,
right price point.
From a consumer standpoint, if you look at a backpack, you don't even realize that backpack's been designed to look a certain way. Not just the function, but it looks a certain way. It has to match the brand.
Yeah.
Like, you look at a product from Black Diamond.
Yeah.
Like,
you know
it's a
Black Without Diamond even seeing product. The label. Yeah.
Whatever they make.
Yeah.
Cams, backpacks, skis. I mean,
and that's important. That's a pretty underrated part about branding in general that I think a lot of people skip out on sometimes. But
yeah,
is what it is. Well, cool. Thanks for doing this, man.
Hell yeah, man.
Well, where can people find you on social media? Where can people find RMU?
I don't care about me. Okay. I'd say.
And on the internet in general.
Check us out. Check us out. RMU Outdoors is our Instagram handle. Really simple.
Yep.
We actually have RMU Breck is our shop here in our flagship in Breckenridge.
Yeah.
And we actually, 10-second plug here, we actually are opening a location in Whistler Blackcomb.
Sick.
In a couple months. And so that one's RMU Blackcomb.
Cool.
And that's a really cool one because I think there's gonna be like, construction pictures and like, what it looks like building on a ski shop and things like that.
Sick. So that'll be a good one to follow for sure.
Hell yeah, man.
When's it open officially? Is there a date set?
There is not a date set to the best of my knowledge. But I think we're planning on hopefully being open for this winter.
Fuck yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks, dude. Man.
Thank you, dude. Yeah.
All right, that was episode number 77 with Mike Polito from RMU Skis. Thanks for doing it. Thanks for listening. Be sure to leave us a review on iTunes if you can. 5 stars is my favorite. 4 stars is not acceptable. And anything below 4 stars, you're dead to me. But yeah, leave us a review. Follow the YouTube. Check out the new stuff we just put out. We're trying to put out a video. Me trying to put out a video every week. Ethan slacking, and I will talk to you guys on next week, because again, like I said, I'm going to try to stick to Monday, Tuesday, and then if we do a second episode of the week, it'll be Thursday. Hopefully that going forward, I'll get my shit together and we'll be good. Talk to you guys next week with, I think, my cat trip. That'll be a good one. All right, talk to you then. Bye.